ladies and gentlemen, recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, it's time for the Fight Night Picks podcast with your host, Frank Allen.
And welcome to another episode of Fight Night Picks. As always, I'm your host, Craig Allen. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Craig Allen FFP. And with me, now as always...
Exactly, the new co-host, Matt Allen. You can find me on Twitter, the same thing, only it's Matt Allen at FMP, or at Matt Allen FMP.
Great way to start the audio podcast version. You guys get a totally different look at Fight Night Picks. We got some new merch, so you can find that fightnightpicks.net. I'm going to bring up the WooCommerce shop back onto the site, so you can find all of that stuff there. And yeah, we've got a really great episode today. We're going to go through some analysis, breaking down the entire card for UFC 235. We're also going to go through some fight announcements that have been announced this week with the UFC, as well as some Bellator stuff. And we've got a really great lineup and a great show. So Matt, what was your favorite part of this show? Now that we're kind of in hindsight, we're mastering the audio podcast. Again, it's a different look on here. So what are you excited about in this one?
I'm really excited about the upcoming card. I mean, 235 is probably the biggest card of the year. It's got the most exciting fights. There's a lot of question marks around it. So I'm just really looking forward to this weekend.
Yeah, 100%. So we'll throw you back into the show and we're going to have some fun. So... it's a really, really busy week in MMA. We've had plenty of fights announced and different things going on in the news, of course. You can see it to my right if you're watching it on the screen. UFC 235 coming up on Saturday from Vegas. I wrote an article quite a while ago when this main event was first announced that the Vegas fans are really going to be treated to a great card. I mean, they had to miss out on UFC 232. It was moved to LA, and you had John Jones taking on Anthony Smith in the main event of that one. So this time around, you get Jones against Smith. There's been a lot of talking going back and forth all the way back before Smith fought Volkan Oezdemir, and it seemed, you know, kind of more likely that Smith was going to face Jones the way that they were kind of jawing at each other. There wasn't a whole lot going on with Volkan at that time. So a great fight there in the main. In the co-main, you've got Tyron Woodley taking on a man who is really deserving of the shot, and Kamaru Usman in the co-main, like I said. So that's coming up on Saturday. A reminder, you can check out a really, you know, late-breaking article. Picking a winner, UFC 235 fight of the night. I went through three different good fights. Matt disagrees with one of them, but possible fight of the night contender. So we'll go through that later on in the episode. And a reminder, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Craig Allen FNP for myself, at Matt Allen FNP. Matt, I've, you know, kind of hogged the spotlight here start off the show. What's going on this week? What are you really looking forward to? And what are some of the fight announcements that really caught your eye?
My two favorite fighters of all time just so happen to have to be fighting each other. So I'm kind of sad about that. I'm happy, but I'm also sad. Dustin Poirier is fighting Max Holloway for the interim 155 title. I feel like that fight's got a lot of kind of blowback just because a lot of people feel like Tony Ferguson should be in that position. But he did turn down the fight. So next best thing would be Dustin versus Max. And I don't think many people could argue that that's not going to be an amazing fight. I mean, it's too... both guys pretty much win fight of the night every single time they go out there. And then we've also got Israel Adesanya fighting Kelvin Gastelum for the interim 185 belt. And I know a lot of people don't like the interim belts, but I feel like at least in the middleweight division, that was the right choice.
Is it weird that there's two interim belts on a card? It's got to be really weird because sometimes they'll load a card with one interim belt at the top just to make it a pay-per-view. But in this instance, we have two of them. Do you agree or disagree with both of them? Let's start with that.
I agree with the middleweight one, at least, because I do feel like Whitaker's out. He's got a legitimate injury. He can't fight. They promised Calvin was supposed to get the title shot, and then they promised Israel a title shot if he beat Anderson. Both those things happen. Both guys that are deserving, not really deserving of a title shot, but in the positions that they're in right now, they both deserve a title shot. So it makes kind of sense that you do an interim title for them. The winner fights Whitaker. And then with Max fighting Dustin, it's kind of weird. It's more of a super fight than an actual title fight. I feel like you could just have that be your main event, so it would be five rounds. Just call it Holloway versus Poirier 2. I know maybe the casual fan wouldn't pick up on it, but it seems like Max Holloway's kind of good, especially with the Ortega win. He's gotten a little bit more popular, not to superstar him like a McGregor or anything like that, but definitely feels like he's one of those champions. I'd say he's like above Robert Whittaker and Tyron Woodley in popularity. He'd be about where like Daniel Cormier is. So he can kind of, he can headline a pay-per-view by himself. He doesn't always need a second title fight.
And it's kind of weird. And Matt's got the We the North shirt on right now, which is the 11th island right
there.
10th
island.
10th island. The 11th is Vegas, which is funny because I saw Max Holloway tweet it out and they said that there was
going to be a
press
conference.
He calls
everything the 10th island that isn't Hawaii.
Exactly. So Toronto fans, Canadian fans really behind Max Holloway. And right now,
he's awesome.
Canada needs to find a star with the retirement of George St. Pierre. We kind of covered it a bit last week. I was solo on the Fight Companion, Matt. Now, we're on Thursday. I'm assuming and crossing my damn fingers you're going to be there because 6 hours solo is a little tough.
I don't work this weekend at all. I will be here. Everything's going to be good. I came down with the flu very bad last weekend, so I couldn't make it.
And it's been making its rounds here in town. So, yeah, hopefully we can have you. Okay. But we're going off right now an article by friend of the show, MMA Kings, Nolan King, and it's titled UFC Fight Announcements, Gaslam vs. Adesanya, Holloway versus Poirier, and more. You can check that out on Flow Combat. And just going down through the list, the first one that jumped off the page, and it was kind of funny, it's the first fight that was really announced in chronological order. Eric Shelton taking on Jordan Espinoza, UFC Fight Night 148 in Nashville. The reason why that surprised me, and it might not surprise a lot of people, is the fact that Shelton's record in the UFC is 2-3. He's a guy that I've known for quite a while. He's a good wrestler. He's a good fighter at 125. He's one of those 15-20 guys. I'm just surprised that the flyweight division's still around.
Exactly, and it seems like even guys who are ranked, if they lose a fight, they just kind of cut them. Every time a guy loses, they just kind of cut them and thin out the division more and more and more until there's going to be no one left. So for a guy like Eric Shelton, who, like you said, he's got a negative record in the UFC, it's kind of weird that they're keeping him around for
especially
so long.
Considering the fact they got rid of Shorty Torres.
Dustin Ortiz.
Yeah, Jared Brooks.
Brandon Moreno, all of good young guys.
It's kind of silly to me anyway, and Jordan Espinoza making his UFC debut, so that's why it jumped off the page. Another one of the fights, Ray Borg taking on Liu Pingwang. That's kind of interesting because you've got Borg moving up to bantamweight in this one, and he's going to be taking on the fighter in Pingwang, who's 2-0 in the UFC. It's a tough fight coming back from a long layoff for Borg. I'm anxious to see what he looks like at 135.
If Ray Borg fights the same way he did down at flyweight, though, he should have pretty good success. He doesn't really have a... He's got a very physical style, and I think that at 135, him not cutting that much weight, it might kind of wear on guys a little bit more, and I think that he will have decent success.
The thing with Ray Borg, too, is really well-rounded. I know, like, his wrestling's really his
scrambled
bread and butter.
Base, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, his striking's still really technical, and I think it's gonna bode well for him at 135.
It's just the power that some of these guys are going to have. It's really weird how 125 to 135 seems like this massive jump for some reason.
Yeah.
Just because at 125, and it's nothing against them, there's not that many stoppages. You don't see a lot of knockouts or submissions. At bantamweight, everyone's getting knocked out. I mean, you've got guys like Marlon Moraes, you've got TJ Dillashaw. These guys are super high level at pretty much everything, and they're finishing machines. So it's really going to be interesting to see how Borg does up a weight class.
And the other fight, and I forgot to mention which card that was on, UFC on ESPN, big ESPN, number 2, Philadelphia.
Edson versus Gaethje.
Which is a great fight. But Michael Johnson taking on Josh Emmett, you know, had Josh Emmett on the show quite a while ago. It was in the summer.
Both friends of the show.
Yeah, I mean, he was looking forward to, what was it, late 2018, early 2019. I mean, it's March, but the injuries he sustained against Jeremy Stephens, you know, he had the broken orbital. He fought, what was it, ACBJJ 14, you know, wasn't really supposed to go there and compete, took on Zubair Takugov, lost that match, but he didn't really train for it.
Didn't really take a lot of damage, though.
And stuff, so. He's been off for the longest time, and Team Alpha Male needs a win. Really These guys do. Are in a rough spot. You got Cody Garbrandt this weekend. They got to do something, and he's taking on Michael Johnson, like you said.
No easy win.
Had the conversations with him, but yeah, I mean, you've got kind of a clash of styles there. Emmett, wrestle heavy, really, really wrestle heavy, but in the UFC, he's been pretty
great.
He'll stand and trade. He'll load up on that right hand, and it really tends to land. Michael Johnson's a guy that can take the fight anywhere, really.
He's got an absurd chin, too.
And he's great on the feet more so than anything. He's got to have a better fight than he did against Artem Lobov
in this
fight with Emmett.
I think all he has to do is keep on tagging him with the left. If you look at the Lobov fight, he didn't really... I guess he rocked him a couple of times, but yeah, if you beat Artem Lobov by decision, you got to do more against Josh Emmett. There's a really big skill gap between the two.
Yeah, and I mean, moving forward, there's all sorts of great fights coming up on UFC 236. You've got those two title fights that we had mentioned. Another one, Eric Anders taking on Khalil Roundtree. That's interesting because Anders stepped up on, you know, kind of short notice, him and Thiago Santos, yep, late heavyweight, which really Rose, the star of Santos.
It did.
Anders didn't look great. He's taken on Roundtree, who looked good in the fight.
I don't think he looked bad. Eric Anders didn't look bad in that fight. I mean, it was fight of the night. It's just you're fighting Thiago Santos. You probably go
with I mean, it didn't go well for him.
It didn't, but I don't think he lost a lot of stock in that fight. I think the Elias fight hurt him more than anything.
Khalil Roundtree is a guy that looked good in the Gokhan Saki fight. Gokhan Saki taking a big blow today when it was announced that he's out due to injury. So he's not going to be competing this spring, and we're not really sure the timeline, how long he's going to be out, but he's been out for quite some time. So Anders taking on Roundtree, early assessment of that fight, I'm taking Anders.
Yeah, I am too.
Khalil Roundtree can catch you. He's done it in previous fights, not just the Saki fight. He has good hands. He's in the UFC for a reason. 3-3 in the UFC with a 1-0 contest.
He's got big power, but if Eric Anders wants, he can take the fight to the ground. I just don't think Khalil has the weapons to defend the takedown.
Two other fights that are on 236. One of them's going to fly under the radar. One will not. No. The first one, OSP taking on Krylov. That's at light heavyweight. That's a good fight because both guys can finish the fight in different ways. They're kind of weird fighters.
They're both extremely inconsistent.
And they are both extremely inconsistent. So that one could be a fun one. And then the other one, Montel Jackson, Andrei Sukumtov. Andrei Sukumtov looked like a totally different guy in his last fight. Like, he took a lot of time off from the Sean O'Malley fight. He got, you know, just trashed online. Yeah, I get it. I understand why.
He got beat pretty bad.
But, I mean, people online are savages. I know it. But, yeah, they really hit hard. Montel Jackson, I mean, had a great fight against Brian Kelleher. And, I mean, I'm really looking forward to him coming back here, taking on Sukumtov at bantamweight. It's a good one. Other than that, I mean, Marcin Tybura taking on Shamil Abdurakhimov, UFC St. Petersburg. First of all, great that there's going to be a card in St. Petersburg.
There is, yeah.
The fights that have already been announced for that are pretty good.
Is that the Volkov-Overeem?
Yeah, that is Volkov-Overeem. That, I mean, there's great most likely going to be a finish in that one, too.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
So that one's a really fun one. I mean, there's all sorts of good fights. The one thing I will say that I don't like about all these fights that were announced, and this one was announced earlier on in the week, pretty much a lineup, if you will, for UFC Ottawa.
Yeah.
UFC Ottawa. UFC Canada. Get it together. What are you doing?
Yeah, it's really weird. Usually UFC cards in Canada are pretty stacked because, I mean, Canada's massive for MMA. Like, George St. Pierre really put us on the map, and they always sell out. It's always great. But yeah, UFC Ottawa, right now, the speculation is that Derek Brunson, who's been knocked out in two straight... I really like Derek Brunson, but still, he's been knocked out in two straight fights, is going to fight Elias Theodoro, who his hands are about... They hurt as much as this tissue does. He has pillows for hands.
And there's a reason behind it, too, because he has, you know, issues with his hands.
But still.
He has issues in training. I know he's spoken about the TUE exemption. Most likely in May, we'll air that interview. I still have it saved away. I haven't played it yet, so we'll play that when the card goes by. We'll wave the flag. We'll go rah-rah for this one for sure. We the North.
Yeah, but...
But it's not a good card. I mean, fights announced so far. Eldierte Sanchez, Andrew Sanchez, jeez, taking on Marc-Andre Barrio. That one's fun. Barrio,
well,
the
Sanchez
Canadian
Sanchez has
that
the
one.
Same cardio program as a Dada 5000, though.
It's
so
bad. It's
terrible.
Straight bad.
He's good for a round and a half, then he just becomes awful.
Canadian Sarah Morris taking on Leah Letson.
That's not a good fight.
Brian Kelleher taking on Mitch Gagnon. That's a fun one. Arjan Singh Buller taking on Juan Adams. That's not, I mean, Singh Buller is going to win that one. Vince Morales taking on Ayman Zahabi. I mean, it's fun for you and I.
Yeah,
you know
Ayman's
the Zahabi
win,
name.
But...
Exactly. From TriStar.
This next fight's good. Bracatona versus Mehrad Bivalshvili is actually a good fight.
That's a fun one.
It is. But then Derek Brunson Elias. If that's your main event, that's just upsetting.
It's not a great one.
Some might even use the word terrible.
Nolan also threw it down. Signings. Roman Kopylov. That's a good one.
It is.
Excuse me, from Fight Nights Global. Ryan McDonald from LFA. And then Departures, the GSP one that we talked about. But also Yushin Okami,
I didn't know this one until
who
right
signed with ONE Championship. And before we go away from these announcements from the UFC, just to focus on Okami and ONE Championship, they had that open workout in LA. I mean, it was huge news all over social media. Bleacher Report was involved. It was all over the big news organizations. And Sage Northcutt, Demetrius Johnson, Eddie Alvarez, a lot of big fights announced as well. And we'll fill you in as we get closer to those cards.
Well, they're also rumored that Vitor's signing with them either today or tomorrow. So that's big news at a one.
Big news for sure. So let's move on. We've got a couple more things Bellator related. It was announced yesterday that Chael Sonnen's going to take on Lyoto Machida. It's a fun fight.
It is. It's not a good fight for Chael, though. Lyoto's extremely hard to take down. He can kick you from the other side of the cage. And Lyoto doesn't seem like he's done yet.
It's weird because in the Carvalho fight, I had Carvalho winning
lost.
That fight.
Yeah.
I had Carvalho up 2 rounds to 1 for Machida. Machida broke his nose in that fight. I mean, when you break your nose, you breathe through your mouth, but he got slower as it went on, and Carvalho kept striking him. I'd like to see the metrics on that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. And the thing with Chael, and somebody had mentioned it in a tweet, or it was on Reddit, and I went, oh, come on, that's not fair. But whenever Chael faces adversity in any of his Bellator fights,
he gives up.
He just kind of gives up.
It's always been there's the Alvarez SAP scale, which is what, like, your heart's measured on. Do you have a heart like Bob Sapp, or do you have a heart like Eddie Alvarez? And then there's the Gaethje Sonnen scale. It's the same thing. Chael Sonnen has never been a guy who... There's guys like Michael Bisping who get dropped, get up, and then they get better. If Chael gets dropped, there's never really a getting back up.
And hey, there's a picture there behind me. I like Chael a lot. Yeah, you got Chael Sonnen and Anderson Silva behind me. I mean, I like watching Chael Sonnen fight, but, I mean, give me a break.
Like, yeah, if you care about Chael Sonnen, I'd rather him just do, like, the analysis and stuff for ESPN and just keep on doing that. Don't take the head trauma. You're really good at that. And Leota's going to give you a lot of head trauma, so let's not do it.
So if we move on, and the point of the show, looking at UFC 235 coming up on Saturday, we're going to have the fight companion. I'll have Matt's got his picks. I've got my picks. We'll go through the card. A reminder to check out the article that's on the site. Picking winner, UFC 235 fight of the night. The link will be below in the description. But I picked 3 fights that I thought could be fight of the night. So if we go over these, Matt disagrees with the first one.
And the last one.
I have a reason why I went with the first one. So the first one I have is Edmund the Golden Boy Shabazian taking on Charles Dynamite Kid Bird. And it was interesting because I read an article on Fansided MMA earlier on this week. And it basically, you know, laid out 5 different fighters that could be on the chopping block with a loss at UFC 235. One of those fighters was Charles Bird. Technically with the UFC, he has a good record, and he's only lost the 1 fight, and it was his last one.
Got knocked in.
You look at Shabazian in his last fight, it was like a departure from everything he's ever done. He had tons of finishes. I mean, he's 8-0 as a professional, but, you know, 7-0 if you count the Dana White Susan 8 Contender Series win, and before that, all finishes. Contender Series was a finish, and he fought Darren Stewart. It was a split decision win for Shabazian.
I thought he lost.
You thought he lost. Can you kind of tell me how that fight went and why he lost that
Shabazian
fight, in your opinion?
Extremely wrestle-heavy in that fight, which no one really expected. Darren Stewart looked good. Darren Stewart's always really good on the feet. He hits hard. He's extremely explosive. He dropped Shabazian, and I want to say the second round. I don't remember which round it was. But anyways, he hurt. Every time he would land on Edmund, he would hurt him. When Edmund landed back, he wouldn't really hurt him. And then he just kept on going for these takedowns. I don't see, if you get a takedown but don't do any damage and don't really control somebody with it, I don't think that really counts for an awful lot.
And that's a good point, because if you look at the fight, Shabazian went 8-21 on takedowns. You might think, well, that's not a bad stat. It's almost 50%. Exactly. But if you look at them and you actually listen to the audio from, that was the Ultimate Fighter Season 28 finale. They say pretty much they're lazy takedowns.
They
like
are.
He's focusing on what he's good at, and he's just going to keep going after that. I mean, he does have a relatively, not that he's wrestle heavy, but he has a good wrestling base.
But there's
and he works on his boxing with Coach Edmund Tarverdian. And his mentor, it's not his head coach anymore, but his mentor is Ronda Rousey. We haven't seen her make the walk with him yet in the UFC. We didn't see her with Contender Series or on the Ultimate Fighter season finale. No, I don't think she will. Just, you don't need that added pressure and that spotlight on
also,
her.
Also, if the crowd starts chanting Holly Holm, what do you think Ronda's going to think?
Yeah, exactly. But if you look at this fight, the reason why I chose it as a potential fight of the night is both guys combined, if you add the 2 percentages together, divide by 2, 84% finish rate on these guys. They can finish the fight. That's why I have it as a possible fight of the night. And if you look at the odds, and we have them on the other page there, Shabazian's around a minus 125 favorite.
The odds are pretty close.
Bird's a plus 105. You know, when they're close odds like that, it's typically going to be a good fight. That's why I chose it there. Second fight that I considered was Jeremy Stephens taking on Zbit Magomedsharipov. That's an easy one.
This shit's going to be a banger.
That's a layup. It's the featured prelim for a reason. They want you to buy the pay-per-view from ESPN moving up, and they've done a hell of a job with ESPN and ESPN Plus. I gotta say that.
Pacing's great too.
You look at this, a combined 34 finishes between these two guys, 25 by knockout, 19 of them belong to Jeremy Stephens, and you've got 2 ranked opponents going at it. If you look at the odds, they're in favor of Magomedsharipov by about minus 250, plus 200 Stephens. The odds have actually gotten a little bit closer since I wrote the article the other day. But the reason why I picked this one, both guys can finish the fight. For me, if I'm making a pick on this one, and I'll make a pick later on, so we'll leave that.
Oh,
but
okay.
The reason why it's a fight of the night is just the finish rate of these two. And the fact, and I wrote in the article, Matt and I talked about this before coming on air. You look at the fight that Jeremy Stephens had against Gilbert Melendez. And yes, you can say Gilbert Melendez over the hill. He had a leg injury and it swelled up to almost Rory McDonald proportions,
but okay,
in that fight.
We say leg injury, but it was caused by Jeremy Stephens.
Exactly. It was caused by Jeremy Stephens. And you look at the second and the third rounds that Jeremy Stephens had there, and his output just went way up. It wasn't like a Kamaru Usman where his output was steady the whole fight.
It was like Max Holloway in the fourth
round.
Yeah,
it went up. So 26 of 92 total strikes for Stephens in round two. And then he went 51 of 101 in round three. And those were both higher than round one. So he kept going up against a good opponent, a guy who had been there and done that in Melendez, who had fought tougher competition than Magomed Sharipov. And if you go back and you watch the Kyle Bochniak fight, which I included in this, Magomed Sharipov faded in the third round. He would try and clinch. There was a lot of clinch work. There was also the final minute where Magomed Sharipov looked up at the clock.
And he was completely gassed.
And then Bochniak went after him, and they kind of separated for a little bit. And that was the best thing that could have happened to Magomed Sharipov. Because if Bochniak went full bore Phil Baroni, bang, 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 he could have finished the fight.
Yeah.
So in this one, I am picking Stephens. I know there's been a little bit of backlash. I don't think it's justified, really, against Stephens this week. I think it's just crazy what's going on Reddit and social media. Leave it out of it, but still,
okay,
this can be a possible fight of the night.
Stephens came out and was extremely honest about how he felt after the Jose Aldo fight. He got the help that he needed. He seems extremely mentally focused. And when Jeremy Stephens is on, he's one of the best 145ers in the world. He hits like a Mack truck, and he carries that power late, like Craig said.
Also, people are quick to point out online that Donald Cerrone has the most fights, and Jeremy Stephens is right under him. Cerrone has the most wins, and Stephens has... like, his wins and losses in the UFC are almost equal.
But he's only fought the best his whole career.
But he's only fought the best, and he's had tons of fights in the UFC. So I get what you're saying, but don't put that in every single Reddit comment section. It's driving me insane. This is a possible fight of the night. I'm looking forward to it. Go ahead.
Yeah, so basically, like Craig had said, and Zabit, I know he gassed in that Bogniak fight, but he did have a broken hand in that fight. So maybe he will, maybe he won't gas. But when you throw all that spinning, all those spinning techniques, he doesn't really land with them. That's the thing. If you go back and watch Zabit's fights, and a lot of people like to compare him and Yair because they kick very similarly. Yair at least lands those crazy kicks. Zabit just, he throws them and they're flashy, but there's not a lot behind them either. He doesn't hit all that hard. He hits very flashy. So I think if Stephens can at least kind of weather the early storm, don't get taken down. If Zabit takes him down, I'll admit he's going to submit Stephens. But if Stephens can stay on his feet, and he has pretty good wrestling, if he can stay on his feet, take the fight late, he's going to knock out Zabit.
And the interesting thing about Zabit as well, in his last fight there against Brandon Davis, it was the third Sulev stretch that I could find in the UFC. Oddly enough, the second one happened that night, and the first one was like... 1993.
It was in the, like, it was way back when.
No, it wasn't. It was in the 2000s. But regardless, there's only ever been three. Matt's fired up. We the North. And the last fight that I have as a possible fight of the night is another layup.
I don't see this.
It's more or less like a free throw.
A layup for fight of the night? This can be the one sided fight, and it's going to be over in 10 seconds.
Super, super layup. John Jones and Anthony Smith. And just, we'll make our picks later. The reason why I have it, you look at the finish rate between the two guys, 28 of 31 finish rate. 16 of 23, and the 28 of 31 is for Smith. So he can finish fights. He also gets finished a lot out of those 13 losses. He has been finished quite a few times. And for John Jones, he's not finishing just by knockout. He's also got a ton of submission wins as well. And you really look at it, the combined 27 wins by knockout TKO. I see that fight going this way. I'm sure a lot of people are going to pick it the same way. And based on the odds too, like, I understand that. I get it. I think Smith has a chance on the ground, and that's the only spot that he's going to have a chance. But again, I talked about this last week in the live fight campaign. I've talked about this on the show before. I think if John Jones can just pepper Anthony Smith and get him into a corner, the problem is Smith covers up.
That's not how he fights, though. John Jones throws one strike, resets.
I know, but if he can follow what Volkan Oezdemir did well in the last fight... All he has to do, it was hooks, which John Jones isn't popular with hooks.
But again, if he just rushes in like Volkan does, that's Smith's only way, is to catch him with a straight punch coming in.
I disagree. I just look at that fight against Oezdemir, where Oezdemir was doing well with the hooks, and then he kind of abandoned it just a little bit because he had Smith hurt. Smith has been finished by body shots. You look at the last time he was finished, it was the Thiago Santos body shot.
I feel like a lot of that could be attributed, though, to the weight cut to 185.
It could be, but if Jones can string together body shots and those hooks, you know, kind of outside of the guard of Smith, I think he's going to be able to get a quick finish. It's going to be a quicker finish than the Gustafson fight. So now I've already laid my cards on the table.
Gustafson's still a lot better than Anthony Smith, though, too.
I think it could be a possible fight of the night. I also went through the you know, overall UFC metrics of these two guys. They're really, really good for both of them. Their accuracy is good. Their submission attempts, actually, Smith has more submission attempts per 15 minutes than John Jones, which is interesting. But yeah, I have this as a possible fight of the night.
I think it could be, but if this is your possible fight of the night, Daniel Cormier is going to be the happiest person in the world. If Anthony Smith can make it a fight of the night against John Jones, and if John decides to go to heavyweight afterwards, Daniel Cormier is going to beat him.
So if we look through this card, and again, the poster brought to you by the UFC on Twitter, and if we go back to the odds, they're from Bleacher Report as of today. You can find a link below for those. We're looking at this card. If now we have to do this beforehand, we'll reiterate it before the show. Matt knows what's coming up. If we're giving this card a letter grade, what are we giving it and why?
Oh, this is an A, no doubt. I mean, the main card, especially if you look at it, John Jones, Anthony Smith, it's a good fight. It's going to be one-sided, but it's a good fight because Anthony Smith is the rightful number one contender. Jones beat everyone else.
It's a shame that we lost one fight due to injury, the Chito Vera fight, which is off the card. So you've got three prelim fights. They're going to be on Fight Pass in Canada. The other four prelims, you can find those in ESPN, and then you get the pay-per-view portion as well. If you're in Canada, again, Fight Pass, it's going to be TSN, and then pay-per-view. We're going to be here with the Fight Companion. You'll see roughly the same view here with the timer down below. You can also find us on Sports Booth, which you would have seen on the last screen. So follow along there, because we check the chat a lot more often than we do on YouTube. YouTube tends to get a lot more hectic, and people tend to ask fairly educated questions on Sports Booth.
They do, yeah.
That we really enjoy answering. So if you can follow us there, that would be appreciated.
Or tweet us, too. We are usually on Twitter during the fight, so that's another good way.
Yeah, I will switch around to Twitter as well. I get into that last week where it was a solo show, and I started reading off tweets. People tended to enjoy it. We'll do that. So if we're looking at this card, Matt, you're giving it an A. I'm going to give it an A as well, which isn't very often that A will agree, A. And B, I mean, it is a really good card. If you look top to bottom, I mean, you've got former champs all over here, whether they were UFC champs or from other organizations. It's a really good one. And if we start bottom to top, Pollyanna Viana taking on Hannah Cyphers.
Better not mug that woman.
You look at Cyphers start. Yeah, okay. So you look at Viana. If you're a fella out in the street and you want a
with
cell
a
phone,
fake gun,
don't go after her. Cyphers, she's a great boxer. In her last fight, she took on Macy Barber, former LFA champ, who really just put it on her quick.
Yeah, she ran through her.
She did, and she was at home in that fight, too. Viana is the favorite in this fight, if I pull those odds back up again. And I've got her to win. I think she's a more well-rounded fighter. If the fight goes to the ground, it's going to be a Viana win. If Cyphers can somehow keep it to maybe a three-round fight or push it into a decision, I think she does have a good chance in it. But I will take Viana in this one. We agree on that.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Moving on, you got. Can you kind of tell us a bit about this fight?
Yeah, so Gina Mazzoni, Craig and I kind of have firsthand experience. We saw her UFC debut in Halifax. She fought Sarah McMahon, which is a tough fight in a UFC debut, especially at the time. And even now, I mean, I guess she's off because she's pregnant. But still, Sarah McMahon's a world-class fighter. And Gina Mazzoni, it's kind of hard to say what she does overly well. And that's not me disrespecting her. She would beat the shit out of me. But Gina Mazzoni hasn't really shown any... she's not a fighter who you can say, oh, wrestling is her strong suit or striking is her strong suit. In the Lena Landsberg fight, she kind of got dominated all around. It was a quick submission loss against
Sarah McMahon.
And then in her second fight, she had fought, it was in one of the China cards, and she had fought an Asian lady who was making her UFC debut. And she won by decision, but in that fight, she was very wrestling heavy, but it wasn't, they weren't the kind of takedowns that are going to take you very far in the UFC. It was against
Wu Yan Nan, exactly. Was who it was, back in 2017. So she only had the one fight in 2018, the one against Landsberg, which, I mean, she fought Chris Cyborg at one point. She has two wins.
And Landsberg's a good fighter, but she completely dominated Mazzoni in every area. So I just think, Macy Chasson, or Chasson, I'm not really sure how you say it. She's from Louisiana, so it could be French, it could not be. But she won the Ultimate Fighter, and she looked phenomenal the whole way through.
She did. It's kind of interesting that just about everybody dropped down from 145. She's going to be here at 135,
she's big too.
Making that debut against Mazzoni. I've got Chasson in this one. I think she's going to be able to get it done. Again, she just does more things well.
Exactly. Her striking is actually really good, too. And it's not really good for, like, Ultimate Fighter. It's actually, if you watch her fight, she's got really good knees from the tie clinch. She's really tall. She's really lanky for the division. Trains with Dustin Poirier. And Yeah, I think she's one of the Ultimate Fighter winners who I honestly think will actually do something in MMA. I think that she has a bright future, and if she can beat Mizani convincingly, it's definitely going to set her up. And again, it's a shallow division, but it's going to set her up for like a top 20 to top 15.
That's what I was going to say. I think she'll get a top 15 after that. I think she's one of those ones that in bantamweight, women's bantamweight, a couple good wins, you can make yourself a top five contender. So just like that, I think Chasen's going to get the win there. And then if we move into that possible fight of the night, or it could be a snoozer, Edmund Shabazian taking on Charles Byrd. Shabazian, the favorite right now. Of course, the coach, Tarverdian, he works on his boxing. I would think for your boxer, your cardio would be pretty good, but his cardio was not all that good. Different muscle groups, though, when you're wrestling against Darren Stewart, who's a big guy at middleweight, taking on Charles Byrd, a guy who apparently he's on the cut list. I think it's going to be a good fight. The finish rate, like I said, really good between these two guys. Who are you going to pick to win this one?
I think Edmund's going to fight him the same way he fought Darren Stewart. I think he's going to take him down, just grind on him, and I think he'll win a boring decision. I'm going to go against Craig's fight of the night opinion.
I'm going to pick Shabazian. I think he's going to be able to get the finish in this one. I think it's going to be either an elbow or a heavy hand. He's going to be able to get the finish in this one.
I think if he does get the finish, he's going to be ground and pound more. Like Charles Byrd just can't get to his feet, and then he'll ground and pound.
So we're both taking Shabazian in that one. If we move on to the prelim cards, Diego Sanchez taking on Mickey Gall. Diego Sanchez, an accomplished grappler in his own right.
Just stop, though. You're 95.
Finish Craig White, the Thundercat.
He beat him by decision. Yeah, it was terrible.
He beat him by decision. Regardless, Mickey Gall is, 5-1 as a pro, 4-1 in the UFC. The one loss, it is what it is.
To Randy Brown. He's a good fighter.
Rude boy Randy Brown is pretty good, unless they're hammer fist from below up top.
Nico Price is legit. Like,
yeah, and Mickey Gall's going to get the win here. I just don't see why there's so many haters that say, A, Mickey Gall with a loss is going to get cut because of, you know, strength of schedule. It's not that great, but Sage Northcutt
is... But he's beat everyone he should beat.
Exactly. Sage Northcutt is a good fighter, so simmer down there. Diego Sanchez is over the hill for sure, and I think Gall's going to be able to get the win. And even with the win, he's not going to get the credit he deserves, which is just a shame.
But I think with a win, it's going to get him into more, it's going to be less freak fights, if you will, and he's going to have to kind of work his way up the ladder like everyone else does. A guy like I was going to say an Alan Jobin, a Bilal Muhammad, these guys are good. Jobin might be tough, but Muhammad, now that I said it, is actually a good idea, I think. He's going to have to fight one of these guys who they're top 25 to 20, maybe.
Yeah.
30 to 20, I'd say, because welterweight's pretty deep division. But after this fight, it's going to kind of be off to the races for Gall. I do expect him to win this fight quite convincingly. If it goes to the ground, he's so much younger than Diego Sanchez. He's bigger than him. He's got a way better range of motion. He trains his striking with Cowboy and Joe Schilling. So he's definitely going to make leaps and bounds on that. And Diego Sanchez just can't take a shot very well anymore.
Joe Schilling smokes cigarettes, and he's a kickboxing champion. So
he once won a glory tournament, and the first thing he did after he won was smoke a cigarette in the ring.
So that's pretty cool, I think. Neat. And I don't condone smoking, but it's pretty cool. Still pretty cool.
If you're that good, you can still smoke. Do whatever you want.
Cody Stamann taking on Alejandro Perez. Stamann a -200 favorite in this fight, which is kind of hard because, I mean, Stamann is 17-2 in this one. Perez has a good record as well.
I just don't know what to do with my hand, says Perez.
Cody Stamann lost his last fight to Aljamain Sterling, which was not a good fight for Stamann.
Aljamain's really good, though.
Sterling is a good wrestler, but Cody Stamann is a really, really good wrestler. And Perez, like you said, I mean, he's had a weird run in the UFC.
He just had a weird week. I don't know if it's the weight cut. I don't know if he's just going through some stuff emotionally. But I thought he lost that Eddie Wineland fight, by the way.
Yeah, so if you look at his record in the UFC, he's only got the one loss, which was his second fight with the promotion. He's on a pretty big win streak. Jeez. Where's Scott Jorgensen been? We haven't seen him in forever.
He retired.
Ian Entwistle, Andre Sukumtoth, Yuri Alcantara, Matthew Lopez, Eddie Wineland are the wins, which is kind of weird considering Matthew Lopez and then Eddie Wineland after wins over Alcantara and Andre Sukumtoth. But regardless,
still pretty good, though.
Still pretty good. Stamann, I think, you know, the wrestle-heavy offense coming off of, you know, two losses in a row, really.
No, he won his last fight, didn't he? Or two. He beat Brian Caraway, then he lost Aljamain Sterling.
That's it. You got it right.
Come on, Craig.
Sorry. I'm a little dull, I guess.
Long day for Craig.
I've got Cody Stamann winning this fight. I think he's going to be able to get it done over Perez, who does have some good wins, and he is stringing together a win streak. For some reason, it's kind of silly, the odds that they have right here.
I wouldn't bet on this fight, put it that way. Perez won, it wouldn't be a surprise, but I do think, like Craig said, Cody Stamann's the favorite for a reason. He's very wrestling heavy. If he takes Perez down, I don't know if Perez will be able to get back up to his feet.
Which is fair. So I'm going to take Stamann, but again, it's a flip of a coin. The odds are weird. Avoid this one if you're into the gambling world. But in the next one, It's another one. It really is a flip of the coin.
It's unproven versus inconsistent.
Exactly. Misha Serkinov coming off a really big win over Patrick Cummins.
But again, Patrick Cummins isn't the creme de la creme.
Coming off of two losses in a row, fighting a guy who was ranked for the longest time, who has great wrestling, taking him to the ground, submitting him by, triangle choke.
We say great wrestling, though, but Patrick Cummins gets taken down like it's going out of style.
He does get taken
all the time.
He's a good wrestler.
Corey Anderson took him down 14
times. That was D2 against D1.
That doesn't mean anything.
I know, Corey Anderson had the lesser of the wrestling.
Exactly.
Johnny Walker has been beaten by guys, and you looked at it last week.
I mean, people have never heard of.
Yeah, like, he lost to, I'll try and remember it.
He got knocked out a couple times, and then ever since, he's pretty dominant.
Yeah, he's looked really good. He's weird as all hell. He lost to Enrique Silva, and then he lost to Clitson Abreu, who fought last weekend. That's who it was. Yes. Who lost and gassed. So, kind of surprising that he gets submitted by Abreu, and that was only in 2015. He's on a big win streak, a win over Luis Enrique da Silva, who you'd know from the UFC. Khalil Roundtree, crazy win. Justin Ledet, insane. The guy tried to soccer kick him when he was on the ground, because Johnny Walker's like...
Because that's what you do when you're crazy.
He's nuts, and then he does the worm. I like it.
I'm a big fan.
He's going to be one of those guys that's super popular in Brazil, but he's also going to be a crossover star.
I think he will, too. He's got to win, though.
It doesn't matter if he speaks English. He's going to be a star.
He speaks English well enough, though.
Yeah, but he doesn't even need to. He could be a mute.
His actions speak louder than his words. I think he's going to win this by knockout, but I would not... If Misha just shoots for a double leg, gets him down, it's going to be a quick night. I think Misha Serkinov has legit Brazilian jiu-jitsu skills. He submitted Nikita Krylov, who we talked about a little bit earlier. Yep. He's got legitimate ground skills. I just think on the feet, Johnny Walker's so weird. He's so explosive. And he's got a lot more tools on the feet than Misha Serkinov. So I do think, I think Johnny Walker's going to win by TKO round one. But if Serkinov gets him to the ground, Serkinov's going to go through him like a hot knife through butter.
Next fight. And it's your featured prelim. You've got Zabit, you got Jeremy Stephens. We focused on a lot to start the show. I'm going to make my pick. Yeah, I'm picking Jeremy Stephens to get the win. And we were talking about it before the show. We actually talked about it at length. We should have saved that conversation. But realistically, Jeremy Stephens, I mentioned the output. His output against Gilbert Melendez just went up. He's had other decision wins where it's just gone up. But typically, lately, he's been winning by finish.
Yeah, he's knocking people out.
I think he's going to get the finish in the third round. I think he's going to tire out Zabit. We've seen it in the past. I'm sure he's worked on his cardio, but still.
Stevens needs the leg kicks, though, I think, to be successful against Zabit. Zabit's big, tall, and rangy. What's the thing that works well against tall, skinny guys? Neil Magny is his biggest weakness. Leg kicks. They can't check them very well. And there's a lot of leg to deal with. If Stevens can hit him with those big leg kicks, jab keeps the beat off of him. And then, like Craig said, as the fight goes on, Jeremy Stephens has never had cardio issues his whole life. He's one of the rare power punchers, so he's got really good cardio. He's got good volume, big power, and good cardio. So I just think, if he gets the fight going late, if he makes the beat work, he's going to knock him out in the third. He might win a decision, but I think he will get the stoppage.
Yeah, I think this is going to be Zabit's first loss in a long time, first one in the UFC.
I think it's going to do him some good, though.
I think so, too. There's areas of his game. I know people online really tend to think he's the next coming. He's going to be the next champ. That's fine. But yeah, he definitely has some things he's got to work on before he faces those top tier 145ers.
You need to beat Max Holloway to win that title. Exactly. See how hard that's going to be?
Exactly.
That man never gets tired, hits like a truck, and does everything well.
So the first fight on the main card.
It's a banger.
Cody Garbrandt taking on Pedro Munhoz. It's weird because Matt disagrees with me on this one, which is totally fair.
I do, but I don't. Just you... You go first.
So Cody Garbrandt coming off of the first two losses in his career, two losses to a guy that now he's not super popular with fans, but TJ Dillashaw, where he got finished in both of them, one in the second round, one in the first. He could have finished that first fight if he was maybe a little bit higher fight IQ, but he was on a huge win streak. He hadn't actually fought in a long time due to injuries, had the win over Dominic Cruz. And then if you go over and you look at his opponent in Munhoz, he's riding his own little win streak with wins over Brett Johns, who I thought was going to win that fight. And a win over Brian Caraway, which it was a good win.
It was a weird way he beat him. But...
And he had a split decision loss to John Dodson, but before that, a big win streak. And he finished Rob Font. And Rob
That's
Font,
hard to do.
I love at 135.
He's a very good fighter. And if you look, I mean, on the ground, if Munhoz can get this to the ground somehow, I don't know how he's going to do it because Garbrandt's a really good defensive wrestler. But if Munhoz can get him down, Munhoz is... I don't want to say like Damian Maia, but he's the jiu-jitsu guy of the division. If you had to kind of pick one guy who that's sort of his ace.
He's kind of like A Vincente Luque.
I would say not at all. He's more like a Gilbert Burns.
Yeah, Gilbert Burns is kind of fair.
He throws big power on the feet. He's slow. That's my only problem with this fight. Pedro Munhoz is not a fast striker. He's slow as all hell. He just throws really powerful strikes.
And Cody Garbrandt, his chin's there. His hand speed is second to none.
Yeah, exactly. If he can keep it on the feet, Cody's going to light him up. But Munhoz is one thing that Garbrandt doesn't. Garbrandt doesn't really throw kicks. Munhoz throws really good kicks. There's good leg kicks, good body kicks, good head kicks. He dropped Brett Johns with a leg kick, a body kick, and a head kick all in the second round of their fight.
Matt's very high on leg kicks this week. I make my pick. I'm picking Munhoz to win this fight.
How?
I think they're good odds. I think he's going to get the submission. Honest to goodness, I think he's going to get to a position where he's going to be able to kick, get in close, not have to worry about the hand speed, and take the fight to the ground.
Do you think he drops him to get him down, though, or takes him down?
He's going to have to take him down.
I think if Munhoz wins, I'm going to disagree with Craig a little bit. I agree with the method. I think he's going to have to drop Garbrandt to get him down, though. I don't think he's going to be able to just traditionally get him down. If Pedro's going to win, he's going to have to take the fight to the ground. He could land a big hook, get him with a head kick or something, but I think Garbrandt's going to knock him out in the first.
You're taking Garbrandt. I'm taking Munhoz. We're disagreeing. The next fight, Tisha Torres, Weili Zhang. Weili Zhang, 18-1. She's looked, great in UFC.
Level of competition is not nearly as good as Torres. Is
it? Not nearly as good, and Tisha Torres has been at the top of the division for some time now, but she's coming off of two losses in a row.
Well,
she's only ever lost to two former champs and a former title challenger.
Exactly.
Rose Namajunas, but the last two in a row, Jessica Andrade, that
took a lot of damage. Excuse me,
that was tough to watch. Ioana Jacek.
That's most of Jessica Andrade.
It's kind of tough to watch. Weili Zhang, since coming over to the UFC, she's been with them for just two fights, a win over Danielle Taylor, and then a win over Jessica Aguilar, which is actually really cool.
That was violent.
That was really cool. Weili Zhang looks legit. She hasn't lost since her debut in 2013, so she's on an 18-fight win streak. You had mentioned it, strength of schedule, totally different, and if you look at the wins for a fighter like Tisha Torres, who's wrestling super good, wins over Angie Hill, Angela Magana, Jocelyn Jones-Lieberger, Beck Rawlings, Juliana Lima, Michelle Watterson.
Now, the Michelle Watterson fight was extremely impressive.
That's the one that we got to focus on, because Michelle Watterson's fighting style, not totally similar to Zhang, because Zhang has better takedowns. Michelle Watterson is the karate hottie for a reason. That's kind of her thing.
But she has good jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, and Zhang's striking is really good, and she's heavy output too, really high output. For that reason, I'm going to pick Zhang in this fight, who's a slight favorite, so it's not a huge surprise, but that's who I'm going to go with.
I'm going to pick Torres. I think this is actually going to be a really entertaining fight. I've seen a lot of sort of hate for it as to why it's on the main card. I do think it's going to be an entertaining fight. Torres has, she's only got one finish in her whole career, but she does have good power on the feet. If you look at her, she's absolutely shredded. And she's got really good wrestling, like Craig said. And if you look at the Michelle Watterson fight, she took her down, controlled her, and almost got the finish on a couple occasions just due to ground and pound. So I think, if Torres can keep the fight on the feet, do a little bit of damage, and then go for takedowns, because I do think her in top position, she's going to be able to inflict a lot of damage that way. I think she wins by decision.
In the next fight, you've got a guy who has a voice like Ryan Reynolds, but who looks like an accountant with a pocket protector, taking on Robbie Lawler. It's Ben Askren and Robbie Lawler. So you've got the former Bellator and ONE Championship welterweight champ, taking on Robbie Lawler, former Strikeforce, just...
He's done everything.
The best.
And he is so violent.
But the thing is with Robbie Lawler, and this is where I'm going, so he lost to Rafael Dos Anjos back in December 2017.
Blew his leg in Winnipeg. The second round.
Yeah, against a way smaller fighter. Smaller
fighter.
But
again, he blew his ACL in the fight.
Yeah, and that's tough. You can still move forward, but you just can't move side to side.
So your takedown defense is going to be drastically... hurt anyways.
Ben Askren and we've been going back and forth about just Ben Askren.
We're probably gonna talk about this fight more than any other.
Yeah, and I prefer if we didn't, because we're getting deep into the show. But you look at the wins that Ben Askren had in Bellator, a young Douglas Lima who was 9-0 21-4, but young.
He's the only guy who's really given Askren problems.
And Andrei Koroshkov, who was 13-0 at the time, but still young in his career. Koroshkov was a champ at that point, if I'm not mistaken.
No, he wasn't,
but he became champ.
He did later on.
It's a weird one for Ben Askren. I like what he's good at. I like, the pedigree from coming from Mizzou and all that. But his last fight was Shin Aoki, who's a way smaller fighter.
Featherweight, really.
Who's over the hill. Sebastian Kadastam, that was a good win. It actually was. But, none of his wins in ONE were really huge.
No.
They weren't groundbreaking. Him sitting on a back doing that is cool.
But that was 6 years ago.
Yeah, you don't see that.
And we kind of got to deal with... That's my only problem with this fight. Bobby Lawler looks like Robbie Lawler, I honestly think he stops Ben Askren. I think he knocks him out with an uppercut or with a knee. Just, he's going to knock him out. Robbie Lawler hits so freaking hard. And he's got good, he does well against wrestlers. I know he's kind of 50-50 against them. And people like to bring up the fact that he's been taken down like 13 times in his last fight. But if you look at who he's fought like Johnny Hendricks, who at the time, phenomenal wrestler. RDA, again, he's good at everything. I just think Ben Askren hasn't fought a really high-level welterweight since 2013. And that worries me. I wouldn't bet on this fight.
I wouldn't either. That's kind of where I was going. Before the show, I've been throwing it back and forth. I'm picking Askren to win. The Robbie Lawler thoughts are kind of starting to creep in. It's really tough. I mean, Robbie Lawler's kind of over the hump. He's not going to be a champ again. I don't think he will. And I think the idea is to pave the way for Ben Askren. It was mentioned today at Media Day with him and Tyron Woodley. Woodley's going to move up to middleweight to pave the way for Askren. I just don't know if Askren can do it at 170. At 165, maybe. If it's a mixture of 155ers and 170ers, he's got a better shot than he does at 170. Because I think against prime Darren Till beats Ben Askren, even if he doesn't have a great ground game.
But he's got good takedown defense, and I think that's all you need to beat Ben Askren.
I just don't know. It's too tough. It's too hard to compare what Ben Askren's done in one championship to what we're going to see in this fight. It's too difficult. After this Robbie Lawler fight, I'll have a good idea.
I'm going out on a limb. I'm saying Robbie Lawler by TKO round two. There, I said it. What are you saying, Craig?
I think Robbie Lawler is going to be able to get it done. He's going to be able to get a finish in this one, too. And for that reason, I'm picking a big underdog, and these odds don't make any sense.
I wouldn't bet on it, though.
These odds are stupid.
They are.
In your co-main event for the middleweight world championship in the Ultimate Fighting Championship, you've got Tyron Woodley taking on Kamaru Usman. It's a fun one because with Usman, he's a decision fighter. They're boring fights if you don't like wrestling, which you're not a real hardcore fan if you don't like Kamaru Usman fights. Is that a good assessment?
No.
Kamaru Usman's output's insane.
It is. He has historical output.
That's the big thing with him. Tyron Woodley, there was a picture behind
him. He has very low output, though.
He has low output, but he's got tons of power, and his wrestling's really good. He doesn't finish a ton of fights lately. You look at the Till fight before that, you know, he had the Wonder Boy fights. He's had really good fights. I think back to the Josh Koscheck fight, but that was a long time ago. That was getting on 6 years ago.
Yeah.
If you're looking at this, Woodley's the favorite, Usman the underdog. The odds are fairly close.
They're getting closer, too.
They are getting closer. The lines are moving closer to par. Matt disagrees with me. I'm picking Tyron Woodley to get the fight, to get the win in the fight. He can finish it. He can win a decision.
I don't think he can.
He can counter wrestle. He's just got... He's better at the things that Usman is good at.
I disagree.
The only thing that Usman has on him is that output.
And cardio.
But Tyron Woodley can counter fighting styles. I know these two guys are matched up really well. Yeah. You look at Wonder Boy. Tyron Woodley fought a smart fight. He fought a really, really defensive fight. You look at the Maya fight. It was defensive, but in a different way. He countered his wrestling, which again, Maya's not a wrestler, but he has to rely on his takedowns to get his submissions. He's not going to, like, well, I don't know, chicken wing you on the feet. So in this fight against Usman, I think that Woodley's going to, again, fight a smart fight. He has, and people are going to disagree, but really, he has some of the best fight IQ in the game.
He does.
Because he's retained his belt for so long, because he's such a smart fighter.
I just hate his reasoning. He always says, I like boring fights because I want to keep my title.
Yeah, I don't
care. There's champs who fight really exciting fights.
Nah, I'm all right with that.
But this is what I think is going to happen. I think it's going to be a terrible fight until the third round. After the third round, I do think he's going to pick up an excitement. Yep. If Usman can last that long. And I should even say this. Usman has good power. If he hits you, it hurts bad.
And he's lasted five rounds, and on shortish notice, he's lasted on.
And he never gets tired.
No.
That's the one argument against Tyron Woodley. He's been known to gas. I went back and watched the first Wonderboy fight. It gets a bad rap. The first Wonderboy fight was amazing. The second one was awful.
I'd be kind of worried about his gas tank if he's thinking about moving up to 185. I kind of wonder how hard the cut is, especially, you know, Tyron Woodley's not some spry chicken.
He's 36 or 5.
35 or 36.
He's older.
Yeah, we can look it up, but he's not a super young guy. He hasn't had like a ton of fights. He's 36.
He hasn't obtained a lot of damage either, which is good.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. And he has been finished in those losses, but that hasn't happened in a while.
I don't think he's going to get finished in this fight. How I see it going is Usman's going to wrestle him heavy for the first two rounds. I think it's going to be really hard to watch, but I think Usman's just going to go for takedowns. He might not get them, but I think the key for Usman winning is make Tyron Woodley work. If you let him, the reason he didn't really gas out in the second Wonderboy fight or the Maya fight, he did a little bit in the first Wonderboy fight, was... they're just very low volume fights. You don't have to make him work that hard. If he doesn't work very hard, he's not going to get tired. Usman, like Craig had said, has historical output. He's going to tap, 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 go for a takedown. Tap, 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 go for a takedown. And I think in those first two rounds, he might not even win them, but he's going to make Woodley work. After round three, I think that's going to kind of decide where this fight's going to go.
I could see it going exactly like that. I just worry and I wonder what kind of takedowns he's going to go for against a wrestler. Double legs, you're susceptible to a knee, to an uppercut, and Tyron Woodley has the power. I just see him winning in either an exchange like that. He can win a decision. It's not like I'm a fanboy. I can see him winning this fight just based on previous performances. I can see him winning it. You're going with Usman.
I think
I'm going with Woodley. If we look at, and a reminder, you can go to fightnightpicks.net to check out recent articles. There's all sorts of great ones, actually. But picking a winner, UFC 235 fight of the night. I've got a picture of Anthony Smith because, hey, it's in the Fight Night Picks library, and we can just go with those pictures that we already have. But John Jones and Anthony Smith is an interesting fight because John Jones, you know, there was a little bit of picograms with Nevada State Athletic Commission's commission that came out today. Nothing that you have to worry about. Smith says he's not overly worried about it. He's kind of came out and, you know, denounced John Jones a cheater before. He's fine with it. He just wants to have the fight. I like how he's calm. He's great in media interviews. He's great with the fans. He's a real guy that you can build a brand around.
Seems like a nice guy.
Which is great that we've seen from him in 2018 and 2019. It's continued on. In this fight, you've got 23-1 Jones, 31-13 Anthony Smith. He has been considered a journeyman, and really, you're a journeyman at that point. He had so many fights and that many losses, but he's in a great place in his career, fighting for a belt. Maybe it'll never happen again. Maybe John Jones goes up to heavyweight and Anthony Smith, it paves the way for him. Who knows?
I think there's better 205ers, but still.
The odds have been shifting closer than they were before. Right now, Jones at a minus 800 and Smith at a plus 550. I think those are fair. I'm surprised they're not further away.
Yeah,
I do. I'm picking John Jones. We talked about it before. I think if Jones can back Smith up, that's the best way to win. It's almost like if you're going to beat Donald Cerrone. And Donald Cerrone's better in his weight class than Smith is in his.
I think Cerrone's found better ways to counteract the forward movement, though. Cerrone throws his big knees up the middle.
But Smith, I just don't see it. If you look back at the Smith wins, Evans, he had to pressure. He had to pressure Uzdemir until he got him to the ground. And he really had to pressure Shogun. The good thing about Smith that Alexander Gustafsson has, but he doesn't use all the time, he's got the killer instinct. Smith, when he senses that he can get the win, he goes after it. You see some fighters that aren't like, you know, like sharks in the water. That's stupid. Sharks are always in water. But when there's blood
in the water.
When there's blood in the water, you see Smith go after it. You look at a guy like Gustafsson, he's more clinical and more tactical, and he's more a more cerebral fight, and those are all cliches. He'll continue to hurt him until he can really finish him. Yeah. Smith takes more chances.
Yes.
And Smith's a smart fighter too. But just in this fight, I just see it going the way of John Jones. I mean, he's better at pretty much everything. The only stat that Smith has over him, really, is that he...
strikes absorbed per minute?
He attempts one submission per 15 minutes on average in his UFC career. John Jones attempts 0.57. So he does have that. I think if he can get Jones caught up in something weird on the ground, he might be able to get a submission. Maybe he rolls into a knee bar out of a scramble.
He's not Ryan Holker.
Maybe he takes the back, but even then, I mean, John Jones is a much longer fighter. They're both long guys. We could talk on and on and on about this fight and try and figure out ways that Smith could win, but we don't have to really figure out a way that John Jones can win.
I think that Smith, I kind of disagree with you in the ways that he can win. John Jones has one weakness that everyone knows about. He's not a great just boxer. The only people who've ever had success against them are people who box on the inside. Alexander Gustafsson, phenomenal boxer. If you watch the first fight, it was close. And in the second fight, if you rewatch it, Gustafsson, when he had the most success, he'd get in close, he hit him a bunch of that left hook, and Gustafsson has phenomenal boxing, though. I don't think Smith is at that level, but I do think that that's the one hole in John Jones' game. Same thing with Daniel Cormier. If you watch Daniel Cormier fights, what's he really good at? Getting close, throwing shots around. That's how John Jones gets caught. He's not a great boxer. Now, he has things to counteract it and take you down. He'll elbow you close. He can throw really good kicks. And he has ways to kind of hide that deficiency. But that is the one weakness, if you will, of John Jones. I just don't think Anthony Smith has the weapons to hurt him in that range. He could catch him with an elbow or something in the clinch. I do think that's one of Smith's better
areas. Yeah, and I mean, he's done it before. You saw it in the Shogun fight. That's all he needed was just a swift elbow. And I believe, because I haven't watched that fight in a while.
He hit him with a right straight that he unloaded on him.
Yeah, exactly. And he looked looked for an elbow earlier that missed, and then he did land an elbow, and that kind of pushed him, he pressured him, he finished the fight. And that's a, you know, we could sit here and gush over what Anthony Smith is good at, but against an opponent like John Jones,
it's not going to work.
It's not like fighting a Rashad Evans or a Shogun, exactly, or even a Volkan Oezdemir. So for that reason, I'm taking John Jones, you're taking John Jones. John Jones,
ground and bound, TKO round one or two.
Yeah,
it's going to be quick.
I've got him to win. But don't count out Anthony Smith. He's definitely a good opponent to take on.
I'm cheering for Anthony Smith.
I'm looking forward to the fight, and it should be a good one. So be sure to check us out. We're going to be on Facebook and Instagram quite a bit this week. You can find me there at Craig Allen FNP. Matt.
At Matt Allen FNP.
At Matt Allen FNP. Again, thank you for joining us. Be sure to subscribe here on either YouTube. You can check out the Fight Companion Live. You can find us on sportsbooth.tv. We're live and in real time there, so it's a better, you know, atmosphere for everyone following along. There's not going to be a delay. There's not going to be people asking for links on there either, which is
nice.
Always a pain when you're in the comments on YouTube there. And also a reminder to find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and CastBox, because this show is also, there's an audio podcast version. I'm a big fan of podcasts. That's where Fight Night Picks got its start. And so you can find us there. A reminder, I'm going to be pulling the shop back up because we've got some great new merch, new hoodies. There's new zip-up shirts as well. There's t-shirts. I've got a pile of them behind Matt. There's a whole shelf full of shirts. So if you say shelf full of shirts, Fight Night Picks, 10 times.
Maybe, everything is happening.
Maybe one. You'll find one under your bed if you lose a tooth. A Fight Night Pick shirt. But yeah, there's all sorts of stuff going on. So please be sure to stay tuned in. And we're really looking forward to it. Thank you so much for joining us. This was a great preview. UFC 235, as well as all the fight announcements and different things that came up this week. You're going to find us on Saturday. We're looking forward to it. So we'll see you on Saturday's episode.